Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. The only thing getting sauced this Thanksgiving is cranberries and me.
The only thing getting stuffed this weekend is the turkey and me.
You guys, that was an iconic. Ready for the end of the year because this is an end of the year best. I just have to say, iconic from the start. I'm so excited for a return guest. You guys, you fucking know what show it is. Andy's Girls, episode 267. Jesus, wow. Literal Jesus Christ. And I am so excited for a return guest, the people's couch. You know him as actor, comedian, writer on Big Mouth. He's back to talk to this Big Mouth, Chatty Cathy. Welcome back, Joel Kim Booster. How are you?
I'm so good. I mean, we are really living through such an amazing moment in Housewives. Like it really does feel like, you know how the MCU does like different eras, basically phases.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. Some of your listenership might know that. And okay. we're in like phase four, basically, of the MCU, and it feels like we're in like a new phase of Housewives right now. Like there are different eras to sort of where we're at, and it feels like we're in a really good place. We're entering a really interesting, fun era of Housewives right now, and I'm excited.
Do you think it's possible to compare current Housewives with like golden era OG style Scary Island, LVP Taylor Misha Goss, Dinner Party from Hell Housewives? Is it possible? Andy went on Radio Andy or Watch What Happens or whatever, and he said that the episode that we saw last week was one of the top five episodes of all time.
Absolutely.
Do you think it is possible to compare the eras against each other or cumulatively?
You know what? I do and I don't. I mean, in terms of like sheer entertainment value, sure. I think that like if we're just basing it on watchability, then yes, last week definitely is in the top five. But here's where I'll say like the difference between last week and Scary Island, last week on Salt Lake and Scary Island, is that it does feel like the stakes are so much higher now in what we are sort of focusing the drama around, in a way that like that's what makes it feel like it's completely different. Like someone else said it recently on a different podcast, but I think it was Bitch Sesh, but they were talking about how like Housewives is now true crime. It's now like we are now in the era of Housewives where we are on our second documentary about a housewife and her crimes. Like ABC News is now breaking down what the arrests of famous housewives and the legal woes of housewives. And that is like, I mean, that is crazy. It is wild that this is where we are at now.
I mean, sidebar, speaking of wild, is there literally no one else on the face of the earth that will go on the record about a housewife and crime other than Dana Pam? Why is Dana Pam it's prestige to have ABC News doing an investigative documentary style piece on like Erica and Jen. It adds so much credibility, not that it's required, like take pride in being a Bravoholic, but then you put Dana Pam in there and it's like, what are we doing, guys? Was there no one else?
It really is. They're scraping the bottom of the barrel. They're just sort of, it doesn't make any sense. But honestly, it makes all the sense too at the same time.
It does.
And I'm happy for her at the end of the day.
It's the best. Whenever someone's arrested, she's like, this is the best day of my entire life. And, you know, it does make sense in some ways that she does speak on behalf of Bravo celebrities who have been arrested, because she has been both a Bravo, you know, element of Bravo talent there somewhere hiding, and someone who pled guilty to fraud, right? Like insurance fraud or something. So good for her. I mean, maybe I should be more reliant on her expertise, because I think we all forget that. Maybe we just need to bring that up.
She's
a little
bit
more.
She's been there and back. Yeah.
She has been there and back. And it's an odd, it is, I guess it's like an invigorating time to be talking about this through the lens of crime, because when you think about the tree and Joe of it all, where Teresa went to camp for however many months because she essentially signed a document, to Erica Jane, who the question is whether or not did she know, did she not, but has never been charged or credibly accused of committing any kind
not
of...
Not criminally culpable for anything that happened.
Right. Not criminally culpable, and we'll see what happens from like a civil perspective. And then there's Jen who was the ringleader of a multi-year federal criminal conspiracy. I don't know that crime be crimin can get any higher than that.
No, and this is the thing, like, we were talking about this last night when we were watching it, and it is like Teresa and Joe's crimes, they were defrauding the government, and it's like, who cares?
Like a bank.
It's like, I don't give a shit, okay?
Right.
Like, they, you know, and they paid for their crimes. Great. You know, Erica and Tom, that gets a little bit muddier, you know? And, you know, it's a little muddy with what, you know, how, you know, Erica's involvement in it and how much she knew, blah, blah, blah. And now we've reached the point where Chencha is literally defrauding the elderly, vulnerable people. And it's like, I actually do know where we can go from here and where we are going from here, because this is the thing. The next phase of Real Housewives that we will enter, and we're sort of tiptoeing to the edge of it already.
Oh no, I'm scared.
Is it makes complete sense that this entire franchise has been building towards our first cult leader, and that is what we're getting in Mary Cosby, who is at once, and I've said this other places, I mean, terrifying, gross, really, really scary, but one of the most important housewives we've ever had. Keep her on the TV. I need to see it, but also keep her away from me and my family. You know, like it is so scary, but it also makes so much sense that of course, this entire franchise has been building towards having a cult leader. It makes so much sense.
It is also just wildly insane that Jen is arrested, essentially adjacent to being on camera for this whole federal mishigas. And we have the cast reaction to that. Shock, denial, disgust, despair. I mean, that's three
fear.
Of those are
fear for fear of culpability.
Fear of culpability. Recognition of the fact that, you know, legal experts are experts in legal, which is a move forward from Beverly Hills, where it's like, wow, did you guys know that a lawyer practices law? Like, that's new information. Mm-hmm. It's understood that I will call between 1 and 6 lawyers. And, you know, we saw the 6 being called.
Yeah.
And it's wild to see the reaction to that take place. And during the same episode, introduce how are you different in how you process Jen versus Mary? Mm-hmm. Because there is a huge difference. What do you account for that? What? Like, how do you process it?
Well, I think that it's about sort of like what they know and don't know about Mary yet, you know, like I think this is the thing that we were observing last night that was so strange, is that it is so clear that Meredith has such a good grasp and handle on what is going on with Jen, and it feels like she is really, you know, on the right side of history in terms of the Jen Shah of it all. And yet she seems so mired in, like, loyalty to Mary in a way that makes her seem crazy. And, like, here's the thing. We might differ on this, I think, but as far as I'm concerned, give Meredith the middle snowflake.
I'm same.
Okay, great,
same,
great. 100%. I think she...
You're in a safe space.
She really has... I think she took the note... She has taken notes since last season. I think that they all sort of have upped their game now that they've seen themselves on camera and understand what parts they're playing within the universe of Salt Lake City. And Meredith especially, like, she is still giving us, like, disengaged energy, but she's diving in a little bit more. She's ratcheted it up. She's turned the volume up in a way that I think is important. And I can't tell how much of her loyalty to Mary is sort of, like, her understanding that she needs to, like, that someone needs to be okay with Mary. I don't know. But it is so bizarre to see this woman who seems so intelligent and so on the ball with Jen Shah be so wrapped up in her loyalty to Mary M. Cosby.
Yeah, I feel like with Meredith and the Meredith-Mary dynamic, there is a difference between denial and silence. Mm. And I cannot figure out for the life of me an understanding of the reality behind how Meredith is processing Mary. Yeah. And it's unfair to Meredith because we have such an obvious decision on camera that she has made about Jen. So my brain only functions through the lens of, like, I'm watching you lose your fucking mind about Jen defrauding a vulnerable population. And yet, isn't Mary doing the same thing? When you are telling people God will only love you if you give me 100K or whatever it is, how is that not defrauding or taking advantage of or manipulating a vulnerable population? You are you are monetizing someone's faith and you're also using it against them, as if to say that you don't care enough about God for tithing 106%. Like, what is the difference there?
Yeah. And she was on, Meredith was on Watch What Happened last night. Mm-hmm. And Andy sort of point blank asked her, he was like, well, what about this guy who mortgaged his house to give her $300,000? And she was mm-hmm. like, you know, like, I've run charity events where people have donated $1 million. And is it crazy that someone would donate $300,000? And it's like, maybe not, but like, it is crazy to that someone would mortgage their house to do that. Like,
yeah, she went on. Do you watch the after show for Salt Lake?
I see clips sometimes, but I didn't watch it last night.
The newest one is a literal 30 minutes long. It is a full, essentially bonus episode of Salt Lake. And she goes on it's so bad for Meredith. It's great for me just like watching it. I'm like, holy fucking shit. She goes on that exact same idea and says, I see no problem with someone donating a large sum of money because it's for charity. What's wrong with that? When you think about Angie's party, she goes, somebody donated $1 million. Does that mean that Angie Harrington is a cult leader? And I'm thinking, like, do you genuinely believe this, that someone who cannot afford to mortgage their house is doing so, that is the same, exact same scenario as a multi-millionaire donating at a charity event? She continues to give this kind of narrative style thinking, which is like incredibly selective and I would say super disingenuous, and yet
she's really tying herself into knots to defend Mary, and right? I don't understand it, because she's I think she's one of our more intelligent housewives, quite honestly, and I don't understand why. I will say, though, it is exciting, because I think, like, the more she digs her heels in on this, the more explosive the eventual schism will be between those two people, and I can't wait. I don't know if we'll get it this season. It doesn't feel like we'll get it this season, but next season, I mean, Mary is insane. She is one of our most unusual, insane housewives I think we've ever seen traipse across the screen. And mm-hmm. I think, like, it'll be really exciting to see Meredith go head to head. You know what I also think, though, is we are building towards a Meredith
yes.
and Lisa split.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It really is, like, it is gonna be so, on one hand, it's gonna be so sad because they are like a real friendship that has been mm-hmm. like a decade-long friendship, but on the other hand, that makes it all the more exciting to see it dissolve in real time because of the cameras.
The stakes are very high. Yeah. We saw them shoot the shit at Shabbat. There are the only good Shabbat to come out of Bravo this year. So kudos to them. But we have seen this tense atmosphere that continues to surround them, because these are two women who have been in each other's lives for a significant period of time before Housewives. Now they're on a TV show, and I think they're both trying to navigate not just like their reputations, I guess, but what are their priorities when it comes to being on camera? Is it to protect each other? Do you just assume that that will happen so you can have these like quasi superficial, which isn't a judgment, but just like the top layer of skin style arguments with each other because you know that you'll come back in support? Or are you taking each other for granted, because they do seem to be going on a path right now that is incredibly divisive?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you get back from this.
I really do think that it comes down to, I think especially for Lisa, you can tell it really spun her out, the fan reaction mm-hmm. to her after mm-hmm. the first season. Like, the reunion was really interesting, because it was the first time that you had got to see these women see what roles America had cast for them after Amen. The first season. And Lisa being cast as a low-key villain, a bully even, in the first season, especially finding, you know, seeing Whitney or Heather mm-hmm. become like a major fan fave, it was really fascinating to see. It really did bother her and sort of spin her out in a big way. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that Meredith came out like super strong after season one. She had some good moments. I think she was a pretty, the fan base was pretty split on Meredith. I think there were a lot of people who were like, yes, queen, we love, give us, go girl, give us nothing. And I was definitely in that camp. And there was a lot of people that were sort of like, okay, she's giving us nothing. This is boring. We don't like her. But I do think that she came up ahead of Lisa. And I think that like both, I think Lisa is sensing that. And I think it is probably a big reversal for Lisa and Meredith's relationship. Because I think you sort of can tell that in their relationship, Lisa has been like, the gregarious, popular, like, mm-hmm. you know, sort of the center of attention. And Meredith has probably, like, sort of been taking the beta role of, like, stepping back, doesn't need it as much as Lisa does. And you're seeing, I think, the show really put a wedge in between them in a big way because of that popularity and stuff like that. And I'll say, too, I was wrong about Heather. In a big way, because this is what I said at the beginning of this season, is after her reunion performance, I said, this happens to a lot of gals on these shows. Mm-hmm. They have a good season and then they go into the next season high on their own supply in a way that brings them down. Ultimately, I think we saw it with Leanne Locken, that she had a really good season. And then her next season, she had a really racist season. You know, and you just can't rest on your laurels, and you can't say I had a good season. People love me. I can do whatever I want. And I sort of thought, you know, I was sort of turned off a little bit by some of Heather's behavior in the reunion last season. And I thought, well, this is going to be a tough second season for her. I was wrong. Heather really has held on to what I think has made her beloved. And I think
that's where you're going.
Yeah. And I think that she has really cemented herself as one of the premier every women of any of the franchises. She really is a great audience surrogate. I think she really does say a lot of the things and react in a lot of the ways. Like, she does seem like a plant. She seems like a normal lady plant. In the middle of these, like, and sometimes it's a little labored. Like, sometimes I'm like, I don't need to hear her commentary on every food issue in every episode, you know, like every time there's a spread, she's like, we got to get her, you know, her commentary on the food. I don't need it every time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seems a little self-aware, but I do think that she is really like, I was wrong. She does seem very natural in herself and sort of like lovely.
I actually genuinely agree with that. I thought I was going to have a different perspective of her first season two based on her reunion performance, which I felt like was a little much. She was at a 12 when I needed her at a 7.
These girls get the Rihanna follow, and it really does
changes everything. And I think what's actually helpful, this is going to sound super fucked up, but welcome to AG. I think what's actually super helpful is that she says things about Jen and her reaction and support of Jen that I so vehemently disagree with. And I'm very appreciative that she says, because otherwise it would be too spot on. Like, we need to have some layers here to navigate of, like, this person is making choices that I don't agree with. Otherwise, what would there be? You cannot be so much of a voice of the audience that you become a vessel. I still need to see you flaws and all. And I think we're going to see that not only with her continued support, quasi quote unquote support of Jen, but also how she responds to the Mary of it all. Yeah. I think she has a complicated reaction, which is sort of helpful for her and to her.
Yeah. I mean, Heather's reaction to the Jen stuff is also sort of inexplicable in the same way that Meredith's reaction to the Mary stuff is. And it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I mean, but it is like useful in terms of the show. Like, they're all, it's nice that they are all sort of like aligning in ways that is helpful for the narrative of the show. You know, like, it's always very difficult when like you sort of put these ladies in a corner where suddenly no one is on their side, and it makes the show less interesting when it becomes that. And it's impossible to watch in a certain way. I mean, it happened with Leanne. It was like, no one's on your side, and it's like, it's not fun to watch, you know, a pylon, essentially. And so there does need to be some people in Jen's corner. And for it to be one of the most likable housewives on the cast this season really does make it all the more interesting.
What do you think about Lisa's continued investigation of all things Mary? How much of that, if at all, do you think is a reaction to what we're talking about, to some, you know, bad weather coming her way last season?
Yeah.
And the thoughts that she was a bully. Do you think, how has that, if at all, influenced what she's doing right now?
I think she's doing some baby LVP maneuvers this season.
And
she is really orchestrating. It's so interesting. What Heather said about her last night, I think, was really apt, is that, like, she doesn't want to say the thing. She doesn't want it, but she wants to sort of line up all the dominoes so that somebody else will say the thing. Because it's like, it was so orchestrated, bringing that guy to her Fresh Wolf party and then setting Meredith up to talk to him. Like, you can see, it's like she's not nearly as effective at it as LVP was. But you can see she's trying to play a little bit puppet master. Like, she really, until backed into the corner last night, she was not willing to come out on record as knowing something about Mary, even more so than you know what she had already said. And so I think that she is trying to sort of whip up a narrative for herself that is not to do with Heather and Whitney. And I think that's smart. Do I think that she's doing, like, a great job of it? No. Not necessarily. But I'm happy that she is. I mean, somebody needs to do it. Somebody needs to be the detective. I think it's really fascinating.
And she does seem to have this, like, extremely close or respect, filled with respect and supportive, understanding relationship with this person, Cameron, who we know since filming very unexpectedly and sadly passed away, which is going to be, I think, a little bit of a trip to Grossville when it comes to who knows how Mary is going to discuss this man at the reunion. When
it's not going to be good.
It's not going to be good. It's going to be pretty bad. It's not going to be good.
It's going to be terrifying, I find. I really do think.
Yeah. And I also think, like, she really does, for whatever reason she's bringing this to the show, I do think there is the possibility that she's doing it because she does think it will bring value not only to, like, the conversation or whatever, and also that she will get some amount of credit for starting, because so many people were so upset online about the idea that this shit was happening. Nobody had any idea in the Bravo community, and the thought that maybe it wasn't going to be addressed and who's going to bring it up. And Lisa decided to be that person, and also is doing it through her friendship with someone who there seems to be a lot of mutual respect. It seems to be, you know, she seems genuinely dedicated to getting his story to these other women, aka the world. She just doesn't want to be the one to tell it.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to be the narrator, but I would rather not read the book.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave the book here and I'm going to guide you to it. And I'm going to say, maybe read the chapter, but I can't be the one to read it aloud.
No.
Which is, that's a tough kind of road to navigate, especially when the person that you're talking about is a fellow cast member.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot here. I wonder if Lisa had a conversation with anybody about, like, who's going to be on my side, or maybe do we think that she assumed that the other women would?
Yeah, it's so strange because we just don't. Mary is such an odd person. And I really don't understand. Like, we're being told constantly that, like, she's such a good friend. Like, Meredith says, like, she's such a good friend to me. And Whitney's like, I love Mary so much. And, like, all of this stuff. And, like, we just didn't really get a sense of, like, Mary's connection to any of these women last season. Mm-hmm. She was just sort of this, like, odd, ethereal presence sort of hiding in this closet for the most part. And, like, I just don't understand. I don't see what they see. Like, she is one of the strangest housewives that has ever been cast. And I just don't get, we have never seen on camera any of the things that would make these women be loyal to her. And so it's really hard. It's confusing. I will say these editors are genius. They really do deserve all the flowers, because like having Mary show up to the party last night being so sour and so weird and so psycho, and then to flash back to Meredith asking her about this man, it made all the sense in the world. It's like, of course she's off. Of course she's being weirder than normal, because she knows, you know, that like now this is sort of coming to a head. Like, she's going to have to deal with these rumors, and she's nervous. Again, she is terrifying. Like, she will have someone killed by the end, before this show is over. I have no doubt in my mind.
I do think there is some sort of similarity between the cast reaction to Mary and some of the cast reaction to Erica, in the sense that, like, this person is screaming at you or saying these nasty, terrible things, and your response is to be like, but I am your good friend. Or in the case of Whitney, I do love you. Like, you're saying these things, and yet you're also telling us in confessionals that she sent you like stream of consciousness hate mail in texts. Like, why are we listening to her while telling her how much we care? Like, what, you're not pushing back at all, because, or you do in the moment, and yet you're doing that to fight for a friendship that I, from the beginning, don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, friends don't say to friends, like, you're ugly, you look old, I look better than
you.
Yeah,
you need the plastic surgery.
Why would you tell this person you love her? Right.
Yeah, it is so bizarre. Really, really strange.
Who do you think is going to come out of this on top? When it comes to the end of the season, obviously there was such an overwhelmingly positive reaction to all things Heather Gay. Do you think that there is a shining star to come out of this? I mean, we both, I think, are on the same page about Meredith being the center snowflake, but that doesn't necessarily mean she's, you know, going to be the people's choice at the end of this.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. I think it's still a little up in the air in a really fascinating way. I said this last night. This show is so great because it has surprised me in ways that a lot of the franchises hasn't really surprised me recently. I think this is one of the strongest first season casts that we've seen in a long time.
I agree.
I think they are all actually vital. And I remember watching the first couple episodes of last season and being like, oh, I think Whitney's probably going to be done after a season. Do I need, you know, Lisa, you know, is Meredith going to give anything? And they've all really risen to become completely vital. Like, I just, like, everybody's had a moment in these last couple of episodes that has been so entertaining and so interesting and just, like, made it seem like we can't go on without them. Now, Jenny, I think Jenny probably peaked when she grabbed for Jen's snack bag. That was extremely important, what she did. And she should be lauded for that, and she will be remembered for that. She will be. But I think that she has given it all that she can give by giving that snack bag. And I just I don't think we need her back. Here's the interesting thing, though, and I'm sure you've heard that they are trying to do what they did with that one season of Jersey and start filming season 3 before they've even shot the reunion.
Oh, no. Even though the trial doesn't start until March?
I think they're trying to get as much Jen Shaw in as they can. And so what I wonder is if they will have to keep Jenny again, because it would be too weird to shoot a reunion with Jenny but not have her be filming during the weird season 3 parts. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they're going to be able to start doing that, but that was what I had read, is that production is trying to start season 3 before we've even shot the reunion.
Well, I mean, the math of it all, we're at episode whatever. I feel like we're probably halfway there. So we'll be in the reunion, I guess, January.
Yeah.
Let's say, I could be getting this completely wrong, but Stu is being sentenced at the beginning of March. His sentencing has been scheduled. It was scheduled when he, spoiler alert, pled guilty. Mm-hmm. Big shock. It's actually sort of a decent sized shock, in the sense of him pleading out so quickly. But Jen's trial is scheduled to start in March. So if they started shooting, I don't know how soon before the reunion airing they would start shooting versus when the reunion is actually being filmed. But I would assume that they would want to cover as much of the trial as humanly possible, because, like, who's flying in for that? Like, is that going to be the cast trip? Like, let's go to New York and like see what's happening.
Well, that might be why they want to get in as much before the trial, because if Jen is in New York, I wonder if they're either going to how much they're going to try.
Such a good point.
Yeah. I don't know. And also, you know what? Who knows if this will even go to trial? Like, she might plead out. Especially if Stu flipped on her, she might be backed into this corner where she doesn't have much of a choice.
I mean, I totally agree with you when you think about the reality here, but the reality TV side of Jen Shah is that I think she's actually comfortable making decisions that don't play well for her legally if they extend her journey on Housewives.
Yeah.
Maybe she is thinking, this is a good investment if I'm already going to be fucked, so that I know that I have a job maybe when I come back, or whatever that is. I don't know that she is willing to step outside of this, because it does appear she hasn't listened to any of her legal counsel. I mean, she got arrested and went on social media talking about how rich she was, glam shots. She's done a lot of things. She's continued filming, obviously. She's made decisions that you would think she's being counseled against doing. So I wouldn't be surprised if she continues to participate in this up until the very last moment that she can.
I mean, I think there's probably only a handful of housewives that have not filmed this show despite it being in their best interest to do so, you know, like I would say almost all of them come out worse for wear ultimately, other than like a handful of the true supremes, but like so she wouldn't be the first, but I don't know, we'll find out.
She does also on the after show double down on this phone call and when she answered and says, "Hi, sweetie," or whatever it was, she's like, it was Coach Shaw's phone, but it was his assistant, which, sidebar, this poor fucking assistant's now being dragged into this shit. It was his assistant, and I thought that maybe because he had a medical appointment and it's so hard to get Coach out of the doctor, I thought that something had happened and he would need a procedure. And I'm still not understanding where internal bleeding comes into, like, that is a very specific circumstance. She's tripling down on this in a way that, like, listen, I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on TV. Why would she not say, someone told me something was coming? Like, does that really truly harm her legally?
I think it does. And I think that she, like, listen, she told the lie, and I think she has to stick with the lie. I don't think she has a choice. Like, she has
to look like a liar.
Down.
She can't look. Yeah. Because if she looks like a liar at this point, at the biggest, most important crisis point for her, maybe ever, when it comes to finding out that this stuff is heading down the pike, like, how does that affect her when it comes to, listen, this is all a conspiracy against me and I'm totally innocent, and Stu's maybe guilty, but what he does on his own personal time that absolutely involves me is on him. I mean, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know how continuing on this show is doing anything but, like, tripling down on harming her defense. And yet, you know, if she was really interested in protecting whatever semblance of freedom she has, she wouldn't have gone on reality TV to begin with. So how is this in any way surprising?
Yeah. No, it's true. I don't know.
And she'll be back next season.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. I don't think she's going to plead. I think the most obvious thing, I think she will be backed into a corner and she's just going to stand there. She's going to be backed into a corner and be like, oh, look, there's a corner, but you can fit a small camera in this tiny space. Like, I think that's what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see our first housewife with a snowflake, but in jail, you know? I mean, if they can do, yeah, I mean, just keep her on the cast. Keep her on the cast. Film with her in jail. I love it.
I wonder if Coach Shaw is ever going to appear in this again.
I can't imagine. I just can't imagine.
And he's a lawyer. He was wasn't he a criminal defense attorney? Or maybe not criminal defense, but he was a personal injury, maybe. He, a lawyer for many
I mean,
years.
That seems like a scam. So, yeah, that tracks.
I honestly feel bad for him. Except, like, sir.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what to say here.
He was one of our hottest and seemingly most down-to-earth house husbands. And to lose him like this is really tragic.
And also on the heels of her talking about the fact that they're like at the center of their family, the outer circles of their family structure, they are seen as sort of the guiding light there. And they almost split. They almost divorced in the span between season one and now. And it's like, well, God, if you had the pressure on you before, she's saying they're stronger than ever because he's supporting her. But it's like, is he really supporting you, or is he trying to get as much of this family intact as possible for the kids? Like, I don't know where one part of this ends and the other begins, except, you know, I don't know what could help a relationship more than someone going to federal prison. Like, how does that make sense? Yeah. I don't totally get it. It's wild. But I guess it is a to be continued like nothing else. I mean, it makes sense that they would continue to film because who knows what is going to happen. And if we're going to talk about tip-offs, I would assume that Jen is going to give a heads up to production if and when she chooses to not go to trial.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, my God, I do have to say, I thought last night Salt Lake City was possibly even more interesting than the week before. And
well, don't get crazy, Sarah.
I mean, don't you think a little? It was so, what, the introduction of Mary, Meredith being a fucking nut when it comes to that, and also being so powerful about Jen.
I will say it was like, I was expecting a real crash, like sort of a Molly come down, you know? Just... That's because, like, last week was, like, taking Molly. It was, like, a real, like, rush to all of the pleasure centers of my brain. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting this week to sort of, like, come crashing down. It's really hard to sort of come out of a high like that and sort of gently sort of land back on Earth. And I thought they did a good job. It was an interesting enough episode that I felt like it was a good transition out of sort of the high highs that we had. And it seems like we're going back up into the atmosphere with Mary next week. So it will be I think it was definitely good and fun, but it was not top five.
I mean, I really fucking loved it. I felt like I was like raring to go.
I mean, we're grading on a different curve with these ladies. We really are. Compared to like sort of the low lows that we ended out Beverly Hills with. I also think, like, you know, I kept seeing the Orange County trailer last night and I was like, Heather is not enough. To play that trailer in the midst of a Salt Lake City episode, I was like, you can't do that and expect us to be excited to watch these bozos. No.
Did you watch last season of OC?
I dipped in and out. I watched the reunion a lot. And that's usually what I will touch down on with any franchise, even the ones that I don't watch regularly, as I like to dip in with the reunions. But it's not it. It's really not it. And I don't think the answer is bringing back Vicky and Tamara. I really don't. I think I think it's time to take OC behind the barn. I really do. I think we've got. Really? I think we've squeezed that orange for all the juice it can give, and I think we need to let it go.
Well, I do feel like we're going down that path of putting shows on pause because Dallas is like either rest in peace or, you know, just somewhere in some point in time, just being left there for a significant period of time. It became too much, too chaotic, too much of a crisis behind the scenes that they were like, let's just take this out back. Then there's New York, which is on seemingly an indefinite pause. It is possible that some of these OG franchises, of which there's really only one.
Yeah, listen, there's a finite amount of real estate mm-hmm. for these shows on Bravo. And if you're not bringing it, then you got to go. Because there are other cities waiting in the wings, okay? There's this mm-hmm. the peacock spillover of it all. It's like, bring off some of these ladies off the fucking peacock bench and put them on primetime, Andy. Because these, some if you're not bringing it, then get off primetime. Go, you know, simmer down in the peacock room for a while and let the real pros take control. I just don't see it. And here's what I'll say about New York. I actually think the reason that we are taking a season off from New York is because they are going to fire Ebony, and they did not want it to be a thing. And they think that if they give us distance between the next season, enough time passes that it will go quietly and that it won't be as big of a deal as it was.
I don't disagree with you. And I've also been like hearing some stuff that I find incredibly confusing that maybe we'll talk about offline. What do you think would happen in addition to that if that were to take place? If she was not returning in some capacity, do you think that that would be a part of a large cull?
See, I don't know, because like it feels extremely wrong to get rid of Ebony and not get rid of Ramona too. And I will say I haven't been watching. I'm not caught up on Ultimate Girls Trip. I think it's fine. I think it's very interesting. I think it's a different
What episode?
I just two. Finished two.
Yeah, wait until four. Circle back after four. Yeah. You're gonna lose your mind, I think.
And okay. I think it's a different beast entirely. I love mm-hmm. the sort of pullback of the curtain. I love them mm-hmm. sort of really talking about the experience of being a housewife in a way that you can't really, we don't want to see on a normal season. Mm-hmm. But the way this show and Andy protects Ramona is so, I've reached my limit with it. Because like, it is even just going so far, like obviously they are still showcasing her horrible behavior, but like the calling Kenya Portia of it all, to then sort of do like a montage of like being like, see, she does this with all people. And it was a really weak sort of point A, point B. Like I will say Kenya gave her a lot of grace in that situation. I think they all did. But like, we know Ramona's a racist. We know she's a horrible. Like, it's just like mm-hmm. in this year, our Lord 2021, I just don't need to see that on my TV. Mm-hmm. You know, I would rather see Mary M. Cosby, a literal cult leader, taking advantage of, you know, dimwit in her congregation than Ramona right now. It's just too much.
And you know, the reunion didn't happen. No. And there was a lot of feedback that didn't happen because they had this property coming out and they wanted to position it as best they could. And they were doing this because maybe New York was in such a dark place that they knew it would be a fucking shit show and unsalvageable. And also they knew that Ramona was going to be on this spinoff. And yet there is a part of me, even though this is sort of counterintuitive, that wonders, regardless of the New York reunion not taking place, is it possible that they are positioning Ramona on this spinoff in such a way that she will get sort of a generous goodbye? That like the spinoff is her is her
it does feel
package.
A little bit like a swan song. Yeah, I agree. Right? I mean, I don't know if that's true or if it's wishful thinking. I could see it, but
same.
I will say that Ultimate Girls Trip is really doing a lot for Lou. It's interesting who's coming out on top. Kenya has never seemed more normal. Melissa is seeming very fun. Like I like Kyle more than I've liked her in the last couple seasons of Beverly Hills. It's sort of reminding me of what was great about Kyle in the first place. Cynthia is weirdly coming off so strange and socially awkward and not reading. Teresa is sort of a non-entity in general, which is interesting. And again, like Ramona's, you know, looking more worse for wear. I would see. I think it's either going to be an entire cull. it's interesting, Leah, speaking of somebody who had a great first, great season and then came in high on their own supply and sort of ruined 100%. It for themselves, it's Leah McSweeney. I would love to see Dorinda back. I'll say it. I would love to see Dorinda back.
And yet and she's Zarin. On the B team. They're both on the B team. I know. They like have this A team and the B team. And I don't know what the being on the B team does as far as play for Dorinda, because it's going to be like Chaos Incorporated over in the Berkshires. But
I do think they either need to do a full call or really bring back some heavy hitters. I just don't know what to do. I mean, New York should be a slam dunk. There are enough interesting people. Characters in New York that it should be a slam dunk. I don't know why they're struggling. So, but
I do want to pivot a little bit because talking about a slam dunk, part three of Potomac.
When I found out it was a four-parter, I did not know. I thought it was only three parts, and I was so relieved. I do think this one was amazing, grading on the curve of all of it. But I do think that it was. I don't know that we ever need four parts. For these things. I mean, I'm grateful for it. I do think that this is making a better case for four parts than Beverly Hills did, certainly.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think that I think Beverly Hills really felt padded. After the initial Garcelle and Rinna stuff, it really did become sort of stretched thin. We kept sort of dipping in and out of Erica in a way. I wasn't fully entertained by all four parts of Beverly Hills in a way that I have been with Potomac. But yeah, it was interesting. So I watched with friend of the pod Matt Rogers.
Matt Rogers.
And our friend Jared, and then my boyfriend came, and he's never seen an episode of Real Housewives.
Oh my god.
And I sidebar.
What
I,
a chaotic choice.
I will say.
Part three of Potomac. I know. What a chaotic choice you made.
I will say. It is almost as much fun. Describing to him the last episode of Salt Lake City before last week, this week, as it was to watch it, to just like sit in bed and be like, and then you see through the windows of the bus, law enforcement pull into the beauty lab and laser parking lot. You know, it is so I'm actually kind of glad he doesn't watch so that I was able to do that. But it's really interesting to see him watch this reunion and sort of really pick up on like. All the things that you'd want him to pick up on. Although I will say he was like, oh, okay, who are your favorite? During like the middle of a commercial break. And he was like, that one on the end. And it was Ashley Darby. And it was like,
wow.
I was like, listen, I was like, has Ashley ever looked better? No. She looks stunning.
Phenomenal.
But do I think her time on this show has come to an end?
Shut up. No, you don't.
She gave us nothing. She gave us nothing. The only thing that Ashley Darby is bringing to this show is her disgusting husband. And I am through. I do not need to see Michael Darby's face on my television, my flat screen 55-inch television ever again.
All Michael heard were inches in that yeah. episode, by the way. He's listening right now.
It is so clear that Andy... This is the thing about this reunion, though. I do think that it... I don't know if we've ever seen Andy play favorites in a more clear way in a reunion than he has this reunion.
In regard to who?
I think he's shown a lot of deference to Ashley. I think he clearly loves Giselle. I think he clearly loves Karen. I think that, like... Listen, I'm not a Team Zen Wen full dyed in wool. Like, Matt is, like, fully in on Zen Wen.
Yes.
Like, he's bought the candles. Like, he...
$500 worth
of He is
of
there.
Products.
Like, slid
Many
in the DMs. Like, he really loves Wendy in a way that, like... I'm sort of split. I do think Wendy really stepped it up this season and is, like, fun to watch. But I'm not quite there. I will say... And this is a really unpopular opinion. And
I know you're
going to
say something
internet.
I'm
going to
hate.
I know you're going to hate it. And I'm going to say it anyways.
It's fine. You should
Candace Dillard has carried this season on her back. She has become one of the most important housewives to this franchise. Love her or hate her. This show needs Candace Dillard. And I get it. I get it. I get where you're coming from. I see the look in your eye. But... She needs to be there. And this is the thing I will say. I do think the double standard with Karen and Giselle, Karen literally calling her a broken whore, mental health, alcoholic, all the terrible things that she said. I do not see a difference between what Candace says and what Karen has said about Giselle and what Giselle has said about Karen. It is strange to me that there is such a weird, I don't know. It does seem strange to me that people hold her to such a different standard than these other women.
I hear you, and I do have sort of a response to
okay,
that. And
let's
first off,
it.
I'm so appreciative for your thoughts because I do not agree with them, and that's my favorite thing to hear. Truly, I knew you were going to say it. I saw the look in your eye, I started giving you eyes, and I went to my own internal safe space. But I do have to say, when Karen says these crazy things about Giselle, and when Giselle rest in pieces, Ray, or whatever, or wears the t-shirt that says tax fraud or like pay your bills or whatever else. While they are wild things to say, I think both women know not to step past the point of no return. And as odd as that is to say, I think if you ask Giselle, being called a broke down, yada, 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 is not past the point of no return. It's just Karen having a moment. And there is a difference between having a moment and being someone who vocally, audibly says repeatedly, I am going to come after the thing that I know will hurt you the most, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to make you feel such spiritual self-harm, and I am going to do it better than anyone else, and does not take an ounce of accountability for it. She, in fact, Candace, and that's what I'm talking about, Candace, in fact, says, you're just not as good at making someone feel bad as I am.
She sticks the landing.
She sticks the landing, and it's all the ugliest tropes. She body shames, fat shames, says these, is doing some othering stuff with Mia that's incredibly uncomfortable.
Well, I will say she did apologize for what she said about Mia's mother.
And then also referred to her mother as that at a point under her breath during part one.
And
so
she,
sure.
She
okay.
Also, I will say that the thing that makes Candace iconic to me is the delusion, is the way she ties herself in it. Let's like when she told Mia that she's, you should have been grateful that I didn't go. It is the same when she in the season when she threw the knife at Ashley. It is the same sort of energy as she was trespassing in her home. It is so funny. I really see her as like a broken human being in a way,
okay.
And I want to protect her, and I want her on this show. I hear what you're saying about the differences in their reads, but at the same time, I think it's like a context thing of like, I don't necessarily think that Candace is always going for what she knows will be the worst thing. Because like, and especially in terms of the body shaming of it all, I mean, like, Giselle and Karen have spoken so heavily about each other's genitals in a way that is like...
And yet, I know this is a weird thing to say. There is a difference between her talking about someone's vagina, meaning like Karen after Giselle's, and Candace specifically talking about a new mother and saying wide-bodied. She knows exactly what she is doing. She's looking for the sensitive spot. And
for
what
sure.
Karen is doing is just being a mess. There is a there's a difference here in the stakes. You are going after the softest spot of a person. I don't mean that literally. You are figuratively going after the softest spot, and you are squeezing it. And then because she is in a world like no other, and you know, there's the mom of it all, and obviously her mom not taking accountability, I'm sure that inspired Candace's disinterest in it as well, and that's a very shortened version of what is a much longer, more nuanced and complicated dynamic in history. But with Candace, it got to a point where it was really not fun to watch, and I say that as someone who does not think she should be removed from the show any longer. I really appreciate her on the show. There are also moments where she had asides during this part that I was like genuinely laughing at. Like her reaction to Dr. Wendy was iconic. Like that was wonderful.
Oh, well, and also shocking at the end to see her stand up for Ashley to Nicki Minaj.
I was like, they were all in such a state of shock.
It really is like that. It's one of the reasons why Potomac is one of the strongest franchises right now is that you really, a lot of these women are zigging when you think they're going to zag.
Yeah.
Like the Ash, and actually I find the Ashley and Candace relationship to be has grown into being so fascinating because even in the last part when Ashley and Candace were sort of like, yeah, I mean, we can hang out, like we can have fun, like it's like we can film together, like that is the nutty thing about them is that like they are both like, yeah, we'll film together, like they show up to the same events together even after all of this, like they are still sort of there. It's just it's really interesting. And I'll say one last thing about Candace is that she does have the best single of any housewife. Like the most.
Drive Back is iconic.
Drive Back is a good song.
It's an Instagram story theme for the days.
Yeah, it really is. Like she really did. She did that. And I'm proud of her. Do I think she has a career? No. But she, as sort of based on all of the housewife singles we've ever had, I think she's definitely up there for sure.
I mean, also talk about an empathetic moment when Nicki Minaj asks her to sing. Watching that in long form is going to be...
I can't wait.
It's going to be... Nicki, this is going to be... it's just... I can't say the word iconic again because I'm rolling my eyes as I say it, but it's going to be spectacular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't wait. Mia, gotta go. Brings nothing.
Tough.
My boyfriend said... I asked him... I was like, what do you think about Mia? And he said... I don't know which one that is. I forgot she was there. Total non-entity. The husbands, always nice to see the husbands. I do think that there's like an interesting sort of, this city has an interesting relationship to the husbands in a way that is like unique to them. It's nice. I love Chris. I really do. I like Eddie. Eddie does seem embarrassed of Wendy. As he should be a little bit. I do think that, like, there is something there. I will say, I thought Wendy had a really strong part two and a much weaker part three. Like, I genuinely do think that her point about that blog was read about by 100 people and you brought it on a platform watched by millions was, like, one of the better points brought up at a reunion in a while. But the sort of science project board and the... the manila folder. God. I mean, Andy straight up saying to her, like, I don't think this matters. It's like really dark and sad. Not a win for Wendy, ultimately.
What do you think about Wendy's kind of turn, almost like her turn of persona this season? How are you processing of it all?
I don't see it as a huge shift. I see it as a natural progression of someone who just saw themselves on TV and is sort of noodling with the dial, like sort of turning the treble up and turning the bass down and sort of, you know, like just adjusting the things that she thought worked in the last season and sort of, you know, making adjustments, taking the notes. Maybe she took the wrong notes. Who knows? But like, I don't think it's like a huge wild shift unlike anything we've ever seen on this show. I think that she's given a lot. She's been fairly entertaining. I it'll be interesting to see how she adjusts from here. But like, I'm glad that she sort of stepped up. I mean, she moved from the end to the next to Andy. Yeah. And that's huge. You don't see that happen a lot.
You really don't. And I also think, you know, she's on her second season and what a quasi shift this has been. And I do think that there's a sort of recalibration that she'll make. And I do also have to say, like, the first two parts were kind of dark for me to watch. I didn't die for them because of some of the Candace of it all, because it felt really tough to watch this person be like, it felt like at some points she was sort of gaslighting the audience as if to say the things that happened didn't really happen. But when they did happen, I did them better than anyone else. And this part was the first part. And I know I'm in the minority for that. But this part was the first part where I was like enjoying it in a way that I typically always enjoy Potomac. I felt like there was a spirit there and a vibe there that was really interesting. I really appreciated what Candace said about her mom and what mm-hmm. Chris said about his relationship with Candace and the business of it all. That was incredibly clarifying. And I think the Nikki element, I think, is actually going to be humanizing for everyone yeah. on that couch. Maybe most importantly, for the purposes of Candace's like time with the Bravo community, I think it actually will be humbling for all of them and helpful for all of them in the eyes of us.
Yeah.
Which I think is helpful.
One last thing I'll say.
Tell me.
Is that it really does upset me that Andy would say to Candace, like, well, why is everyone telling me to fire you? And yet doesn't say the same thing to Rinna. When people have, like, that's what I'm talking about with the favoritism. It's like, yes, clearly he has it, like, a love for Rinna, sure, and I get that. But like, you look at Rinna's Instagram, you look at Twitter on any given night of any of these reunions or any of these episodes. People want Rinna fired just as much, if not more, than people want Candace fired. I will say that, and it is interesting to me that he doesn't bring it up in the same. With the same veracity that he brings it up with Candace.
And also, that's such a good comparison, holy fucking shit. It is also interesting to think about those two, because in many ways, a big reason that people want Candace fired is because of her behavior off camera, which if you were Team Candace, you could maybe argue, sure, it's become a part of the plot now, but that's not necessarily her central role on the show. She should be judged more against what she says on camera. The Rinna stuff is entirely on camera, because the little nuggets of sass and whatever she does in her Instagram stories and then her dirty delete where she pretends it didn't happen because she knows everybody has a screenshot, it's all because of her behavior on camera. You mm-hmm. would think that would be more of a priority in the eyes of talking about the narrative of audience opinion as, you know, correlating to this season of whichever franchise.
Yeah.
That's, oh my God, that's an aha moment. That's an AG aha moment. And I'm so appreciative that you said that. Also, you need to come back because I truly die for you. And I actually would appreciate you coming back and us like kind of talking through the Candace of it all.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's actually helpful. And I think that you raised some points that are interesting, and you did it in a way that didn't feel like you were agreeing with her behavior, where you're like, there is a thing here, but also she's a superstar. And what's difficult for a lot of people when talking about this is it feels like if you are Team Candace, you're excusing all of her shit. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. There's another path to travel that's more complicated and more nuanced, and I think better for everyone involved.
Yeah. I think a lot of things can be true at the same time.
Right?
Yeah.
So do I. Listen, talking about all things true at the same time, die for you. Thought this was a prestige episode of AG. Can you tell the listeners how to follow you, some stuff you've got coming? I didn't even get a chance to ask you about Fire Island, which I am dying to know about.
Yeah.
My fucking God.
I'm so excited. So yeah, everybody can follow me at I Hate Joel Kim on all social media platforms. I wrote and started a movie with Bowen Yang called Fire Island that's coming out next summer. So we have a while. I am seeing my first screening of it tomorrow, which is kind of exciting.
God.
I'm really nervous,
Mazel
but
tub.
Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm shooting a new show for Apple with Maya Rudolph that also comes out next summer. And you can watch, Santa Inc., which is a claymation Christmas project on HBO Max that I did with Sarah Silverman and Seth Rogen, about Sarah Silverman trying to become the first female Santa, and that's out on December 2nd on HBO Max, and it's really, really fun.
Joel Kim Booster, you are taking over everything. I think that's unbelievable. Talk about some prestige projects.
Yeah.
My goodness. Wow. And also your time on Las Culturistas.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
chef's kiss. I mean, die for it. Obsessed. Listen, guys, follow Joel Kim Booster. And then what the fuck are you doing? Follow me on Instagram at Dame Gally, patreon.com. The single best way to support Andy's girls. I'll have a bonus Satchel Spectacular up this weekend. patreon.com/Andy's girls. Joel Kim Booster, Thanksgiving is allegedly this week, and I'm so thankful for you.
I'm so thankful for you. Are you kidding me? This is the first podcast I've done in truly months because I just have not felt I had the time or the energy. And when you came calling, I said, yes, I will answer the call. I will go to war for surrogate.
Can I please tell you, Joel Kim Booster, that there have been two episodes this year that I was like thinking in my head, especially. These are very good episodes. One was with Roxanne Gay, and the other was today. So
I'm
I
honored.
Just need to let you know. It's you and Roxanne Gay. Talk about people making a difference in culture. The two of you are right up there. Guys, I hope you all have a happy Thanksgiving, all things considered, and that you are staying safe, staying sane, getting vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.